Welcome to the Science of Getting Faster podcast. This is where we get past the headlines and talk directly to the researchers to find out what their studies suggest and what they don't. I'm your host, Nate Pearson, and I have Chad Timmerman with me.
Hi, everybody.
And today we have back Dr. Heal Pouffet. Okay. And if you don't know who he is, please listen to the last episode where we discussed ketone esters during performance. But this one is super duper cool. Why don't you describe, what were you trying to find out in this study?
So up to then, almost all research just focused on the effect of ketones during exercise. But we thought that maybe the most benefit might be if we provide ketones not during, but after exercise. So there were some preliminary data that ketones might stimulate recovery after exercise, so that it might potentially impact protein anabolism after exercise, so stimulation of muscle regeneration, and also that it might impact on glycogen resynthesis after exercise, which is really important. So therefore, we thought maybe ketones might stimulate recovery. And when is recovery important? That is mostly when you perform a lot of high-intensity exercise in a couple days in a row. So for instance, in a grand tour, you have within only 3 weeks, approximately 20 stages of performing maximal exercise. So and therefore, if ketones might stimulate recovery, it might result in a better performance on the next day. So also on the next stage, and as such, you might become better compared to other racers during a grand tour.
Could it also have impact on like a training camp or just a hard block of local training?
Indeed, it might also help you to increase your training load because you are less prone to get overreached. So in this case, it might also help to increase your training load.
Yeah, so I'm going to say it another way. If everyone is limited by some level of volume because of their ability to recover. So that's going to be different for different people. And you can do things like sleep. You can eat, have good nutrition. You can time your training well. But there will be a point where you can't train more. So what you're trying to find out is, well, what if we ingest ketone esters? Does that point then, can you do more volume and not yes. get the same overreaching symptoms and maybe overtraining where your performance actually decreases?
That was indeed the thing that we want to investigate. So we asked the participants to perform some exercise that they were unable to do. So to really get them above their maximal capabilities.
This is an evil study. This is like, I kept going through and I was like, oh,
it's brutal.
Oh my yeah. goodness. Brutal, brutal, brutal. So let's go through the methods. First, you picked 20 healthy males and not well-trained cyclists. Why did you do that?
It's really important. We really want to induce some symptoms of overreaching. But if you would have recruited a really well-trained cyclist, it's almost impossible to really get them in a stage of overreaching within only 3 weeks. And then secondly, it's also really difficult to recruit highly trained athletes to get them overtrained because it's really definitely nothing positive about that.
Yeah, they're like, you're going to do like 8 hours a day for 3 weeks. And they're like, no, I don't want to do that.
I'm guessing this is also why you didn't do a crossover design, because getting them to do it one time was hard enough.
Yeah, indeed. And also it really takes some time to recover from this.
Sure. So,
and they were definitely not willing to participate once again.
So because you didn't do the crossover design, you did matched pairs and split them in their groups. Can you kind of describe that process? Because I think that's interesting.
So definitely a crossover design would be the most ideal situation. But yeah, as we just discussed, it was almost impossible in this study. So therefore, we used a different approach. So we used matched pairs. So first, we familiarized all the subjects with the exercise performance tests. And then we tried to find always two subjects that were almost equal to one another for their performance. So for their performance during a time trial, also for their VO2 max, their body weight. And so we tried to match those two, and then one of them received ketones and the other one received a placebo. So in this case, we could compare whether there was a difference between those two subjects who were generally who generally have similar exercise capacities.
So the length of this, you did a 3-week training overload where each week it got progressively harder. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the first week was not easy, but it was still possible. So during the first week, all subjects performed all their training sessions and completed them, while at the third week, the training load was so high that they were really unable to maintain, to perform the exercise that we wanted them to do. So this is also something that you often see in a grand tour, where really the intensity gets most extreme during the last week. For instance, in the Tour de France, with a huge amount of mountain stages, while during the first week, there are not that much mountain stages.
So during each week, I'll go ahead and we'll go back to what the actual workouts were. But at the end of each week, you had a test. What are those tests?
So as well, before the start of the study, and also at the first, second, and a third week, we had a subject perform a 30-minute time trial followed by a 90-second sprint. And this was used to evaluate their performance. And we also performed these performance tests during the recovery phase. So after 3 days following the last training session and 7 days following. So to see how they recovered. And again, as in our previous studies, we always standardized the carbohydrate intake before each exercise test, just to have a really standardized way of testing their performance.
And it looks like it was 60 grams of carbs.
Yes.
Great. Okay. So you evil people, I have the chart here in front of me. I'm going to describe each workout. They were doing double days. And they would start on, each day is a little bit different. I'm going to get in the whole program, but basically here are the types of workouts. 30-second all-out sprints with 4 minutes and 30 seconds rest between intervals, and those would increase from 4 to 5 to 6 sprints per week. There was an intermediate endurance workout, which I call this like threshold hard workouts. It was 5 times 6 minutes at 100% or 110%. Of your threshold with 8 minutes rest in between. And then there was a constant load endurance training, which was 60 to 95% of the TT power. And I say threshold, these are based on the TT power for 30 minutes, but maybe around, threshold. And they did that for, 60 to 95% of the TT power for 60 to 150 minutes. And on like every day they had, besides a rest day, they were doing these twice a day, or like they do two of these workouts per day. So did I get this right?
That's completely correct. So we really choose this workout to get them as much overreached as we could, because there are three important things to really get someone getting overreached. That is, have a high training intensity, which we had through to the maximal sprints. Then we also had a high volume, so due to the endurance training sessions. And then we also had the monotony. So they always performed the three same types of exercise. So in this case, we could really get them, letting them develop overreaching.
And each of these weeks was pretty noticeably progressively harder than the week that preceded it too.
Yes. So really the second and the third week are really awful. So that's really, we always evaluated it after the week. How did they feel and how can we progress? Because if we would have started as horrible as we did the third week, subject would be unable to hold it for 3 weeks. So it was really important to gradually increase training loads.
You boiled them. You boiled the frog instead of throwing them in.
Yeah.
They would have quit because, the first week too.
Yeah. They often said it during the last week. They really said, if I had this feeling in the first week, I would definitely have stopped. But yeah, when they are already 2 weeks busy with this, they won't stop.
Okay. Then during each one of these, during the test, they have the standardized breakfast and dinner, correct?
Yes.
The evil part of this, the sprint test, is my right? I don't know if I wrote this down, but did I read it was a 90-second sprint test?
It's indeed a 90-second. So it's really the most worst sprint that you can do. So if you do 30 seconds, it's still possible. 60 seconds, okay. 90 seconds is horrible.
And they're blinded to the power output too, correct? So they had no idea where they started versus where they ended?
Indeed.
Well, they're not trained, right? So you... Like if you get a trained cyclist and you say 90 seconds, you're like, I can probably measure it. Like they're not sprinting. But if you just tell someone off the street who's fit and say, you sprint for 90 seconds on this bike, I bet you the power will just start high and just dive. Just boom all the way down until two. Is this true that if their cadence went below 70, you didn't stop the test. You just lowered the wattage so they would keep going for 90 seconds.
So in this case, we had a really fancy device. So it's an isokinetic device. So they always keep at the same revolutions per minute. So they are unable to lower their revolutions. And in this case, so if a subject will decrease, is getting fatigued, just the... how do I call it?
The resistance falls.
The resistance falls. So they always keep cycling. So it's unable to stop.
It's like a reverse erg. It's like cadence is the same and then the power changes. Yeah.
However deep you dig that hole to start, you're stuck in that hole all the way through the entire 90 seconds.
Yeah, that is... I would not want to do that. So that is crazy. Okay. So I'm going to totally trust you and say that you shelled these people. It was men. So you shelled these male athletes. And at the end, they were extremely tired. So during this, how did you, this is my question. How do you measure if someone's overtrained?
So it's really difficult to really know whether someone is overreached or overtrained. There are not really clear cut criteria available. So there are some parameters that are suggested that someone is getting overreached or overtrained. So for instance, you see a decrease in performance. So therefore, we measure performance during the time trial and sprint every week. Also, some differences in heart rate. So you get a drop in your maximal heart rate. So if you look at our study, in the placebo condition, there was an average decrease of almost 20 beats per minute for a maximal heart rate. So it's really a huge decrease in maximal heart rate. Then something you often see is also an increase in adrenaline and noradrenaline excretion in your urine, which is also something we observed. And then something that is also often observed is a decrease in maximal blood lactate values.
So they could... Go ahead.
But there is not really a clear-cut criteria to say, for instance, if someone's maximal heart rate drops below 170, then he's overreached. That's not possible. So it's always some kind of guessing to know whether someone is really overreached or getting overtrained.
You're looking for trends. Go ahead.
We're on this topic, and I know this is a little bit deeper in the weeds, but you guys recognize that there was an increase in the GDF-15, that growth differentiation factor. Do you guys plan to investigate that more? Does that seem like a marker that is very telling in terms of overreaching, overtraining?
It's really an interesting marker. So it's a really novel marker. So only recently been discovered. And we observed that GDF-15 increased progressively during these 3 weeks, and that the increase in GDF-15 correlated with a decrease in performance, with a decrease in maximal heart rate. So it seems that GDF-15 might be a reliable marker to detect the development of overtraining already really in an early phase. And also we performed a subsequent experiment with the riders of the Koenig Quickstep in the Tour de France. And there we also observed that GDF15 increases during the tour and that the increase in GDF15 correlates with their feeling of tiredness. So GDF15 seems to be a really promising marker to detect overreaching in an early phase, but there is definitely more research needed.
Okay, is there? Yeah, for sure. It's very exciting too. Is there any chance that that GDF increase correlated with a decrease in the carbohydrate intake?
We didn't really look at that, but as the decrease, as the increase in GDF15 was smaller in the ketones and it had a higher carbohydrate intake, it might be possible. But there is a study in mice showing that if you alter the carbohydrate intake, that there is no effect on GDF15. So we think that it might be the other way around, so that GDF15 might increase and as such results in lower carbohydrate intake.
And two, I think the carbohydrate intake was only the third week. And I think you noticed the increase of it, though, in the second week, too.
Yeah. GDF15 was already different between the placebo and the ketone in the first week, while differences in carbohydrate intake were only evident during the final week.
Oh, great. Okay.
Let's go through the results. We've talked a little bit about here, but so there's they're both overtrained, the two groups. One had ketones after it was 25 grams, correct? 25 yes. grams.
So they received the ketones immediately after exercise, so after each training. So they performed two training sessions per day. And then they also received an additional dose immediately before sleep. Mm. Because your sleep is really important during such a three-week overtraining period.
So they're basically doing $100 of ketones a day.
Correct.
And yeah. Heal, was the rationale there that it would improve the quality of their sleep?
That's something, yeah, we didn't measure the quality of the sleep, but we indeed think that ketones might impact on your sleep quality. So we also observed that with ketones, you had lower adrenaline levels during the night, and higher adrenaline levels might decrease your sleep quality. So might be that ketones impacted on your sleep quality.
So you have the two groups. One did $100 a day of ketones. The other just got horrible tasting drinks the whole time and got smashed for 3 weeks. What were the results at the end?
So the most important outcome was the training load that they were able to perform, because we let them perform trainings that they were unable to perform. So almost all subjects had to lower their power to get to the end of the training. So, and for the training load, we observed that during the first 2 weeks was the same for the ketone and the placebo condition. But in the third week, the ketone ester group was able to tolerate approximately a 15% higher training load. And this difference was most evident during the long training sessions. So not during the short high intensity exercises, but really during the long performances.
So that, and by 15% more, you mean by kilojoules, right? The yes, power
indeed.
Output.
So it's really a huge difference. And then besides that, we also observed differences in numerous physiological symptoms. So for instance, the maximal heart rate dropped by approximately 20 beats per minute in placebo condition, while in the ketone condition, it only dropped half the amount that we observed in the placebo. And then also the blood adrenaline and noradrenaline excretion in the urine, this increased in the placebo condition, which is a response to the intense exercise, but we didn't observe this increase in the ketone ester condition. And then finally, also something really interesting to us was a difference in their food intake. So besides the standardized food on the testing days, we let the subjects completely free. So they were They could ingest whatever they want to. But we observed that the ketones were able to increase their food intake in proportion to the increase in training load. While the placebo condition, they kept their energy intake always at baseline, despite increase in training load. So they were getting in energy deficiency, while the ketones didn't. And what was also really interesting was that they increased their energy intake only by increasing the amount of carbohydrates that they ingested.
And they got to choose, like they just ate whatever they wanted, right? And they just naturally chose carbs?
Indeed. So it's really surprising that they just choose to ingest more carbohydrates because we didn't say anything to them to do. So they were completely free. The only thing that they had to ingest was a recovery drink immediately after exercise, just to have an ideal situation and also to replicate what a real cyclist will do.
Looks like Chad has a question.
I do. Heal, is there then a possibility that really ketones just serve as an appetite stimulant then? Because if their performance increased in correlation with their carbohydrate intake, is it the ketones that are actually spurring their appetite, helping them eat more carbohydrates so that they can perform at a higher level?
We really think that it's the other way around. So if you just ingest ketones acutely, you will see the completely opposite response. So if you ingest ketones acutely, you will see a decrease in your appetite. Okay. But in this overreaching study, we observed that appetite, so that the caloric intake increased in the ketones. But in this case, it might be the overreaching itself that caused a decrease in appetite. And one of the possible mediators of this is the GDF-15. So GDF-15 increases in response to exercise. And if you get too high levels of GDF-15, it might cause a decrease in appetite. And as ketones counteracted this increase in GDF-15, this might result in the higher carbohydrate intake in the ketones compared to the placebo.
Okay, great. That makes perfect sense. Thanks.
So based on, I know people have this question. So it's kind of what Chad just said. How do you know the higher output wasn't just because they ate more carbs?
We can say it for sure, definitely. But it's clear that there are already numerous differences in a lot of physiological symptoms. So for instance, in the heart rate, in GDF-15, in adrenaline excretion, those differences are already there at the first week, while the difference in energy intake are only in the last week.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of summarize what we just said. Over the 3 weeks, we saw in the first 2 weeks a decrease in overtraining markers in the ketone group. And then in the last week, they ate more carbohydrate. And what you think is happening is they were actually they were overreaching less. Therefore, their appetite wasn't suppressed so much. So they ate more naturally. Is that correct?
That's completely correct. Yes.
Yes. So I think we, two of us on this podcast right here, we are going to be doing Cape Epic in October. And that is an 8-day stage race. And for us, that'll be enough to overtrain us, I think, or overreaching because it'll be, Nino does it in like 5 hours a stage or something. So we're going to be, I'll be like 7 and Chad will be like 10. Skin Chad. But could this be a great strategy for somebody doing maybe not the Tour de France, but either a 7-day training camp or a, 7-8-day stage race where after their ride, they do 25 grams of ketone esters, and then before bed, they do another 25 grams of ketone esters. Does this suggest that could be a beneficial strategy?
Based on our study, it would indeed be really good to ingest the ketones, as you said, after the exercise and before sleep. But also, you still need to make sure that you ingest also enough carbohydrates and proteins immediately after the stage. So it's not only the ketones, but it has an additional benefit over also the carbohydrates and the proteins.
Recovery plus ketones. I would definitely
recommend, especially for non-elite athletes, to use the ketone ester if they can afford it, of course, because it's really expensive. Mm-hmm. To use it like this. But yeah, for instance, for elite athletes, we don't know yet whether it works similar as in non-elite athletes as we studied.
So then if you were a professional sports team, let's say you had unlimited budget, virtually unlimited budget, would your study suggest that for elite athletes, they should just do this every day of their lives, after every workout and before bed?
Definitely not. So yeah, first, we don't know whether it works with elite athletes, but if you have the budgets, you should just try it first during a training camp, when they train really hard, and then you can already see whether it helps or not. Because it might also be that some athletes might benefit from it, while others might have even a negative effect. That's definitely possible. And then if you're convinced that it works, you should simply use it during really hard training stages or during a grand tour, but not after an easy training that's not needed.
This has been fantastic. Chad, do you have any more questions?
Yeah, I just want to actually reiterate something that Heal said on a podcast I listened to a little while back. It was Gabriel Martin. You were with Peter Hespel, and you, I think the podcast is Power to the Pedal. But you said that in terms of ketone research, your researchers are still very much in the dark, in that you don't necessarily know where ketones go. You don't know what organs metabolize them. You don't know what their role is. Beyond ingestion, we don't know what happens. You suggested there might be signaling effects, that this is more than just an energy substrate. There's still quite a lot to learn, yeah?
That's definitely true. So we think now that most of the effects that we observed are simply signaling effects. So if you see the effect of GDF15, this is not caused by having an additional energy substrate. It's really by a signaling effect. So in also a recent study, we showed that ketones are not used to generate energy during exercise. So if there is any effect, it's purely due to their role as a signaling substrate. But yeah, there is not much known about what ketones specifically do. So there is a lot more research needed to really figure out under which circumstances it might work, under which it might not work. So also, if we look at our study, so the effects during the overload training are much higher compared than our acute studies, because in this overreaching, you have numerous physiological dysregulations, and it seems that ketones really impact on a lot of physiological systems.
So it's really beneficial more when you're overreaching. It seems to be.
It seems to be, yes.
Yeah. And you know what? Now that we're at the end of this, I can say the name of the study. Ketone ester supplementation blunts overreaching symptoms during endurance training overload, which we didn't say it before because it was going to give it all away. But this has been fantastic. I think based on this, I will try it. But Cape Epic, I'm going to use ketone esters and see if that, based on my other little experiment, to see if it works with me. You've sold me. I guess that's the wrong word. You've convinced me. Chad, do you have anything else?
I don't. No, that was wonderful, Heal. Thank you.
Heal, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks a lot.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you very much.